Connecting the dots of strange anomalies, making it safe to tell your stories of high strangeness and also looking for the truth from Brazil to your own backyard. Hi, everybody. I'm Connie Willis, not afraid to go there. And for George Norrie, he's enjoying the holiday weekend. Hope you are as well. You're listening to Coast AM, and tonight we're going to be talking with Stan Gordon about Bigfoots. And not just Bigfoots, but are they ET? Are they interdimensional? What are they? Well, we're also going to have some open lines for you, too. Thanks for joining us on this holiday weekend. We are live from the 840 WHAS studios in Louisville, Kentucky, with the iHeart studios. And we'll be back with Stan Gordon next year on Coast to Coast AM. You're listening to Coast AM. I'm Connie Willis, filling in for George Norrie. And tonight, we're going to be talking with Stan Gordon. Stan has been researching UFO sightings, Bigfoot encounters, and other mysterious events in Pennsylvania since 1959, believe it or not. He looks so young, too, if you've ever seen Stan. I can't believe that. But since then, he's been involved with the investigation of thousands of unusual incidents. He is the primary investigator of the 1965 UFO crash incident that occurred near Kettsburg, Pennsylvania. I know they're about to celebrate 50 years, and I know Stan's preparing for that. He's been also taking calls on UFO sightings and other strange reports from the public since 1969. He continues to receive unusual reports on a regular basis. And one of the great things about Stan, I loved meeting him in person. I just fell in love with him. I got to meet him in between when he was doing a conference in Pennsylvania. He is the guy to go to with any UFO, Bigfoot, any strange anomaly whatsoever. When you're in the state of Pennsylvania, anywhere else, I don't think he really cares because he wants to get out there and investigate. He's the Pennsylvania guy. But that's what Stan would do. He gets a phone call, and he will go investigate. I love that. A lot of people will just write it down. He goes out there and experiences it, and it gets to know the people and really, really get the details. And he's just fantastic with it. He is just Mr. Fact Man. And I'm excited to talk with him. Stan, how are you? Thanks for being with us tonight.
Good morning, Connie. We're doing fine. Thanks for having me on the program this morning.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so excited about this because it's not just Bigfoot we're going to talk to you about. I know you just, you know, cover a ton of things, but it's the aspect of Bigfoot and the fact that he might be extraterrestrial or interdimensional and the reason why there's no scat, you know. there's no bodies, just all the other strange anomalies that go along with it. And, you know, I don't know that if I didn't have a chance to go out Bigfoot and myself along the way, if I would even ever ask you that. It wasn't, except for my own experiences and interviewing a lot of people myself, that I would even consider that fact. But you cannot not consider it when the strange things that happen around Bigfoot and happens.
Oh, that's correct. You know, I started in this, as you said, a long time ago, and I began, of course, hearing about Bigfoot reports back when I was a youngster, and I began doing research on it back, as you said, in 1959 when I was 10 years old. So I have a little background in looking.
You sure do. Reports.
And in high school, I was already, of course, interested in the subject. A lot of the students knew that I was, and I remember there was an area called Livermore Cemetery out in Westmoreland County. It was a area that had a history already of hauntings and apparitions being seen. But a lot of the kids would take their girlfriends there to go parking, and they would come back with stories of seeing what they described as gorillas coming out of the woods and throwing rocks at their car.
Oh,
and
wow.
That was long before people really heard about Bigfoot sightings very often in that part of Pennsylvania. But historically, now that area is along the Chestnut Ridge. And I'm sure you'll hear me talk about the Chestnut Ridge because that mountain range is 100 miles long, and it runs from Preston County, West Virginia, to Westmoreland, Fayette, and Indiana County in southwest PA. It is probably one of the most active areas yearly for phenomena, from Bigfoot sightings, UFO encounters, encounters with other cryptids such as thunderbirds and black panthers, and all kind of other mysterious events happen all along the Chestnut Ridge. And so anyhow, that was quite interesting. And now, historically, in many more recent years since the late 60s, that area has become very, very active with Bigfoot sightings.
You know, when you get a phone call, Do you go out immediately if you can to go check this out, or what is your little protocol?
Okay. Well, I should go back a little bit in history so the people know a little bit more about how I set up my investigations and research. And you know, as you said, I started this a long time ago.
And very credible, I may say. I really believe that with you. Very credible. You do it right.
So in the late 60s, I got involved with a small group of some scientists and professionals in Pittsburgh called UFO Research Institute. It was a small group. There was some Westinghouse scientists, and one name you'll recognize was Stanton Friedman, who was just starting pretty much at that time in the field. He was a physicist at Westinghouse in Pittsburgh at the time, and they had this small group that was investigating sightings around the Pittsburgh area. So I was probably the youngest guy in the group, but I already had a lot of experience doing interviews with witnesses, so I became the telephone sighting coordinator. So when they would get a UFO report, it would come to my phone number at my house, and I would do the initial interviews and see if the case is warranted further investigation. And I stayed with that group until they closed down their operation. And I decided in 1969 that I was going to set up my own hotline for the public around Westmoreland County, east of Pittsburgh, to report UFO sightings. So I began to make contact with local police and the news media and told them what I was doing. And, of course, back in those days, there was a lot more ridicule than there was today than there is today. But as word got out about my hotline, the phone in my home was ringing off the hook day and night, and calls were coming in not only on UFOs, but anything strange and unusual, from haunted houses to strange creatures and just all kind of mysterious events. Well, it got to the point very quickly that I realized I couldn't handle this on my own, and that I needed research people who had the background so they could go out into the field and investigate these cases. So that was my goal, to set up a volunteer research group of specialized individuals who could respond to these cases very quickly. So in 1970, I founded the first of three volunteer groups. That was the Westmoreland County UFO Study Group. We started first here in southwest PA, outside of Pittsburgh in Westmoreland County, and expanded to the Pittsburgh area. And over a period of time, it became probably quite a unique group in that the majority of people involved were specialists of some type. We had scientists and engineers and technicians. We had scientists from Gulf, from Alcoa, from Westinghouse Research in Pittsburgh, from colleges and universities. We had police officers. We had former military intelligence people. We had all kinds of specialists who we were all doing this around our full-time jobs. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek, he would have called this the Invisible College, because so many of the people I was working with were doing it anonymously because of their positions and because of the subjects we were dealing with. And with my electronics background, I set up a very involved, detailed communication center in my home, and I designed a two-way radio dispatch system so we could radio dispatch some of the investigators out to the scenes very quickly. So we started out first in the Pittsburgh area. By 1973, we had expanded to take over the whole state of Pennsylvania. And we had many, many reports coming on a regular basis. And to our surprise, we began to get referrals from the state police, other police authorities, the news media, who were referring cases to our group to investigate. And so we were extremely busy. And that's how it all began. So from basically that period of time to the end of November of 1993, I was involved with three different research groups. And since that time, I'm working as an independent researcher. And yes, I get calls quite regularly, almost every day calls come in on current or past reports. And I get out to as many cases as I can at this time. Of course, I don't have my groups anymore. I do have many contacts still out there, so I at least try to get, if the case warrants it, I try to get a local investigator out to the scene. Cases in my general area, if they're important enough or possible physical evidence, I do go out myself, so I'm still very, very active getting reports in.
And I love the fact, too, that your wife gets involved, and I love that in your book, the one that I have here in front of me, at least, The Silent Invasion, the Pennsylvania UFO Bigfoot case book. Love it, love it, love it. But I love that you give so much credit to your wife as well to hang in there with you and to deal with this, because it is hard to have relationships in this world and this belief system, I guess, or this research, because people just sometimes want to go the other way. So I like that you're also that way, and your wife is so supportive of you, and you're sweet back to her. Well, let me ask you this. When it comes to the Bigfoot, because let's just go right into that. Tell me some of the stories that you have that point Bigfoot into being an extraterrestrial or interdimensional or something not of this planet.
Okay. Well, first of all, as you'll probably hear me say during our program tonight, that there are many unanswered questions, and I do not have the answers, and I will tell you that. There's a lot of information I've uncovered, and some of it leads me to believe we're dealing with something possibly with Bigfoot that may be something other than a flesh-and-blood explanation. But, you know, I started, again, out in the field in 1965 doing field investigations on UFOs and cryptid cases. So since then, I've worked on hundreds of Bigfoot sightings in Pennsylvania. I mean, sightings come in year after year. As recent as the last couple of weeks, we've looked into a report, and it goes on year after year. And,
well, Stan, didn't you tell me that I think I heard it from you that Pennsylvania, the state of Pennsylvania, has the most UFO and Bigfoot reportings in the country? Is that right?
I don't know that, but I know Bigfoot UFO sightings definitely at one of the high ends of the state. In Pennsylvania, we probably have more well-documented Bigfoot sightings than even many other parts of the country, because so many of the sightings I've looked into here, many have been daylight sightings. You know, a lot of people I hear in the field say, well, Bigfoot's mainly a nocturnal creature.
Oh, I know it.
And yet there are so many amazing, very close-range sightings in daylight.
Stan, I agree with you absolutely. When people want to go Bigfooting at night all the time, I'm saying, you know, you don't have to, because most of the sightings are in the day. And by the way, just real quick, too, if you've ever driven through the state of Pennsylvania, and if you know much about the Bigfoot world, Bigfoots, they like to say that Bigfoot loves to eat deer, so wherever you see deer, you're going to see Bigfoot. And by the way, Pennsylvania, any road, you're going to just see deer on the side of the road, because there's so many of them that have been hit. I mean, there's just so many deer in that state.
Oh, yes, there's no doubt about it. But anyhow, you know, as I began my investigation, and of the hundreds of cases I looked at with Bigfoot over the years, I always, when I got involved, I was always open-minded to Bigfoot if these reports were real, and I thought that the evidence we had uncovered and the hundreds of people we've interviewed, many very credible people who saw these creatures at very close range, that they were probably some type of unknown primate. And then some things began to occur, especially in 1973, but going back a little bit even before that historically, you know, going back to a case that I remember caused my attention a little bit was back July 31st of 1966, when I'm still in high school. And here's this major UFO incident that occurred up in Presque Isle Beach up in Erie, where a UFO is observed. Several people had come down to the park to go picnicking, and they got their vehicle stuck in the sand, and they noticed this object streaking through the sky, and this mushroom-shaped object hovering low over the area with lights on and a beam of light coming down. And this object, whatever it was, apparently landed off of Beach 6. And some of those people in that vehicle went with the police over towards where the thing looked like it had fallen, there was a small group of people still in this car that was still stuck in the sand. And while the others are looking for the object, some kind of a featureless, gorilla-shaped creature approaches the car and apparently scratches it. And one person starts hitting the horn, and this thing goes back towards the woods, towards the object, and the object seen taking off. And it was a story that made huge national news, because back in those days, the Air Force was still officially investigating UFO cases. So they came out, and they found what appeared to be some possible landing marks and other unusual marks on the beach. And it made a lot of news. The NICAB subcommittee investigated the case. The police investigated the case, and the Air Force still lists that UFO incident as unknown. They kind of dismissed the creature part of it. But I thought kind of interesting that you had something described as a featureless gorilla-shaped creature with a UFO. And then in 1972, back here east of Pittsburgh, we were having quite a lot of activity going on with UFOs. In April and May, we were getting, for weeks, reports of formation of luminous objects moving across the sky. And in some cases, some type of metallic material was falling. So our teams were getting out there interviewing people and searching those areas, and we came up with this very interesting metallic residue, which for a better term we called space grass. And it's interesting.
What did you call it? Space grass,
for a better term.
I like that.
Thousands of pieces of this very thin, long metallic strips that were all interwoven together.
Ooh.
And under electron microscope, you can see how they're all interconnected. And we got out there and various labs examined it, and it turned out to be 100% aluminum. The interesting thing is, of the many companies and people who looked at it, nobody could identify it as to why anybody would make it or where it originated from. And then later in the year, in the spring and summer, here in the same area, along what they call Humphrey Road, residents who lived there for years suddenly began to report strange howls and screams from the woods and something heavy walking in the woods. Then in May, two people in that area were taking a walk early morning when they see this large, dark, broad-shouldered creature chasing after two dogs. Mm. And then in July, more reports of Bigfoot activity and strange sounds coming from the woods. And in July, in that same area, two people saw what they described as these two orange lights about the size of a golf ball, about 8 feet above the ground in the tree and about 20 feet away, that were floating around. They looked like giant fireflies. So we began to get UFO incidents and Bigfoot activity in the same area. And then 1973 comes around. And it was an amazing time to live through. It was very lucky that my teams were already set up and very, very active, because nobody ever expected what was about to happen. So 1973, and your listeners will remember, in the fall of 1973, the United States experienced this massive UFO wave. It was making the news on the local and national news and the evening news for weeks and weeks. Back in Pennsylvania, this wave of UFO sightings began January 1st, and it continued right up to the end of the year. There were hundreds and hundreds of UFO cases being reported. And let me mention this before we get any further. One, when I began to go out into the field and investigate various type of phenomena, and it's the same today, many reports come in, whether it be a UFO sighting, a cryptid report, other type of paranormal events, many reports initially may seem very strange and unusual, but when you properly investigate them, the high percentage of them are found to be either natural or man-made in origin. There are many things that can cause misidentifications. And also, I wanted to point out, and as strange as it may sound, in all the years I've been doing this, now going on 56 years, I have never personally seen a UFO or Bigfoot myself.
I know. I can't believe that. You've been doing so much. I know as well that you're always looking up or looking out wherever you go. So it's just a shame. But, you know, you're getting some of the best stories ever straight from the horse's mouth of these people. So, I mean, at least you're that close. But, you know, one day you're going to have that experience, hopefully. And at least you'll be prepared for it, because I've had the experience myself, and we can definitely talk about that later when there's more time. Let me ask you this before you get into the other things. That metallic, the metallic material that you had found before, do you still have that?
Oh, yeah.
Where is that? Where is that in your house? I want to see that.
I have it. I have it in the safe place.
Ah, do you have pictures of that in one of these books?
Yes, I do. In fact, in the Solid Invasion book, it is in the beginning of the book.
What page is that on? I got to find that.
I have it right in front of me.
Dan, come on.
It went out here. Ah, here it is. Page 26, there it is.
Oh, okay, great. That's got to be pretty interesting. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, again, this material is interesting because it was found in clumps, interwoven in the grass. It was found up in the trees over areas where people claim to have seen these glowing objects and something falling from the objects.
It looks like an SOS pad.
Say again?
It looks like an SOS scouring pad.
Yeah, it's a little hard to tell in the black and white photo, but it's very interesting. And like I said, you can see thousands of strands of this thin metallic material. And again, we know what it is, what it's comprised of, but nobody over the years could figure out who had manufactured for what purpose.
Oh, I love that. Well, there we go. That's certainly not something that some wild animal, I would think, could engineer just out of grass and trees. And I don't know. I guess we'll find out more possibly through all your investigations. We're going to We're going to be coming back here and talking with Stan and getting some more of the little stories and see if maybe you guys have some stories too with open lines later on. So Stan, hang in there. We'll be right back with Stan Gordon here. Thanks everybody for tuning in on the holiday weekend to Coast to Coast AM. Coast to Coast AM, Connie Willis and in for George Norrie, who maybe he's shopping. Hey, Black Friday, right? Who knows? Maybe he's sleeping. Well, hey, you know what? Instead of going to those stores, I tell you what, one of the best gifts that I know I would love would be to be a Coast Insider. So what a great gift to give to somebody. I mean, anybody that's into the things that we're all into that we're here tonight together, well, you know, if you just happen to fall asleep during the show, and we understand it's some late hours or early hours, depending on what coast you're on. But, hey, you know what? You can listen to it tomorrow or listen to something 2 months ago, 3 months ago, whatever, you know, whatever you want to listen to. So what a great gift to give to somebody, a subscription to Coast Insider. So all you have to do is go to coasttocoastam.com and find that and register and give somebody a nice gift, maybe even one for yourself. Hey, we're going to be back with Stan Gordon. We're going to figure out if Bigfoot is an extraterrestrial, interdimensional, or doesn't exist at all. Stay where you are with Coast to Coast AM. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. Stan Gordon and Connie Willis here. We're talking about Bigfoots and the fact that they could be extraterrestrial or interdimensional, maybe not just flesh and blood. Stan, I've talked to some people that do believe that there's actually two kind of Bigfoot, not not just the sizes and then the Yeti and all those types of different variations, but the fact that there are some that are flesh and blood, and that there are some that are extraterrestrial. And I, you know, well, why don't you even tell me what would be the difference between the extraterrestrial and the interdimensional ones?
Well, again, there are a lot of unanswered questions out there. And I think the whole phenomenon, as we get into it tonight, we'll find it's much more complex than most any of us really understand. And
you're right.
Anyhow, if you want to get, I was going to go back and give you a little bit more of that 73 stuff we left.
Yes,
off.
I love it.
Stuff.
Absolutely.
Right, so, 73, as we were talking, was a major time for UFO activity in the country and in Pennsylvania. So a lot of the sightings in Pennsylvania, they weren't just lights in the sky, but they were large structured craft, large metallic objects were seen at low level. There were many reports of car chases, objects hovering over roadways, chasing cars, landing reports. It was an amazing time. So we're very busy just working on all this UFO activity all year long. In the summer, however, something else happened that was extremely interesting. We had the biggest outbreak of Bigfoot sightings ever recorded. It started in the summer of 73 and continuing into 1974. And it came to my attention as a result of a phone call I got on August the 7th. This took place in a rural area outside of Greensburg, behind what was then the old Green Gate Mall, which back in those days it wasn't developed that much, so there was a lot of trees and brush around the area. And the incident happened actually on July 31st. The person happened to, after the incident, he had some physical problems, maybe as a result of the event, went to the hospital. He got out on the 7th, and I got a call from his relative, said he was home, and I went out to interview him that day. So what I found out is on July 31st, it's a warm night, he's in his bathroom shaving in that rural area, and he always shaved early because his job required him to get up real early. So he's shaving as normal. It was warm. He had the window open in the bathroom. He had the screen in the window, and he's shaving as normal. He begins to smell this funny odor. He said it was something like rotten cucumber.
Oh.
He turns around to look at the window, and there in the window are these two huge glowing red eyes staring at him.
Mm.
Well, the wind is 8 feet off the ground.
Oh.
Okay. So he runs into the other room, starts yelling for the relatives, and they come running in, and they smell the odor, but whatever was in the wind is gone. They had some dogs tied in the back, and they thought it was strange that the dogs didn't respond. And so anyhow, when I went out there on the 7th to interview him, he was still pretty upset, told me the whole story, still couldn't understand what it was that he had seen. But while I'm there, I find out that a group of boys several weeks before was going to take a shortcut over to the mall. And again, there was a lot of brush around there, and they heard this noise in the woods. And they thought it was a deer. So they started throwing some rocks in to scare the deer out. But instead of a deer, here comes this 7 to 8 foot tall, hair covered creature with long arms swinging, going across the road and goes up on the bank up behind the house. So I was able to interview some of those boys and talk to the people that owned the property and ask if it was okay if I went up and looked around, and they said sure, and a couple of the boys asked they could go with me, so we're showing up there up over the embankment back there, and up there for a while when the ground conditions weren't real good, as I recall, and I was about ready to leave when I happened to look down, and there on the ground in front of me is the strangest footprint I'd ever seen. And the boys come running over and start yelling, what kind of animal can make a footprint like that? Well, the footprint was 13 inches long and 8 inches wide, but clearly three-toed.
Ooh.
So I got on the radio, and I called one of my helpers, and he came out, and we took photographs and measurements and made a cast. But while we're out there in the field, we get a radio call. The one of our investigators north of Pittsburgh, almost the Ohio line, that morning was investigating incident where something about 9 feet tall was looking in a window, and the police had found some large footprints up in that area. So this began this series of strange creature Bigfoot reports going on for weeks and months into 1974. So it starts out in southwestern Pennsylvania, but it extends to many, many other counties and other parts of the state. So for weeks and weeks, these reports are coming in. And I was in a job situation where I had some vacation time coming. I ended up working full-time on these cases for several weeks.
Excellent.
And our teams were out there day and night, I mean, working on these cases. So as reports are coming in from the police departments and the news media on my hotline, we're responding 24 hours a day and having, in many cases, people on the scene within minutes after it happened. That's why we're able to document these cases so thoroughly and so quickly. And, you know, as all these reports are coming in, initially, all these reports seem to indicate that there's something out there, probably something zoological in nature, and something we still didn't know much about. Well, as these reports are continuing, some rather strange aspects begin to come to our attention.
Yes.
In the summer, for example, up near Grapefield. Now, Grapefield is a little community that's a few miles down the road along the railroad tracks behind the old Green Gate Mall. And you really, if you could just visualize the geography, I mean, there's a lot of woods, you know, a lot of areas there with something to hide. There was railroad tracks, a lot of woods. And anyhow, some strange Bigfoot stuff was apparently going on all around that general area. Well, these guys are down in Grapefield, and they're walking along the railroad tracks, and they see this dark, man-like creature with glowing red eyes running ahead of them. And the strange thing is that they reported was they would see the figure on their one side of them, and then suddenly it would physically disappear and reappear seconds later on the opposite side of them, yet they heard no sound and no movement as this happened. And then the same thing is reported in November up near Jamonville, up in Fayette County, by other people. And the reports continue to come in of other odd activity. A man near Latrobe, August 20th, told us that he's riding in his car. All of a sudden, this huge hair-covered creature walks out in front of his car, in front of his headlights, and suddenly the car engine begins to stall out.
Oh, wow.
As the creature moves off, the car goes back to operating normally. It gets stranger and stranger.
Now, you're good with facts like that. What could do that? What could I even, is there something that I could do that could stop your car and then start it again?
Well, you know, this type of thing has, interestingly, been reported with various UFO cases. Especially
yes.
Back in the 50s, the early 60s,
yes.
You know, when we would have reports of these large objects pursuing cars, we would have various type of electromagnetic interference reported where they would stall out the cars, and other type of cases where we've had like localized power failures when these things have been seen. So
yeah.
This was very interesting in that it's something that you don't hear about very often. I have heard a few cases like this over the years, and I'm aware of other ones around the country, but it's not something a lot of people in the Bigfoot field, the UFO field, seem to be aware of, or they'd rather just pretend these cases don't exist.
That is probably a big thing, because when I actually went out Bigfooting myself and met the people and were talking to them, there was a particular guy that started telling me some things, and then another guy that was telling me some things. And because I've studied a lot of the UFO and ET activity, I started hearing things that abductees would say. I started hearing things from people that, you know, saw beams of light and things like that. And I couldn't believe that in comparison, I was hearing this, because I thought, well, that's what I hear from, you know, UFO stories when they talk about, you know, even with ETs, you got telepathy. Well, in the Bigfoot world, you have mind speak, and people talk about these things speaking to you. And also the lights. In fact, you were talking about the golf ball size lights. I had people telling me they saw soccer ball size lights in the woods at the same time that they would see some big hairy creature. And they'd also see lights in the sky. So the things you're talking about. And one of the big things too, how people do say, just like you just said a second ago, when they say they're in the woods, they hear this thing trampling through, and I've heard the same thing before. It sounds like an elephant going through the woods, just crackling big branches and limbs as it's walking casually. And you can almost feel the casualness of this and hear it as it's doing this. And then when it senses you, it stops. And then the next thing you know, totally gone. 45 minutes you can sit there. You won't hear anything else. And you know they're gone at this point. But they didn't make any more noise. And did they just, boom, disappear, as what you mentioned that some of these other witnesses have said to you?
Yeah. And so it gets better. As these reports are continuing to come in, we begin to see a pattern in some areas. For example, we would have a UFO sighting in a particular geographical area, and within minutes to hours to days later, we would have a Bigfoot sighting, or vice versa. And then it got much more interesting. So August of 73, in a wooded area outside of Greensburg, here we have a wife of a prominent doctor. She sees there's a large boomerang-shaped object with windows hovering low over the trees in her area, and at the same time, she's smelling this very strong, odd sulfur-like smell. And a few hours later, she begins to hear gunshots right down the street and finds out that her neighbor went out to see what was disturbing the dog out in the back by the woods, to see this huge, hairy creature chasing after their dog, that a guy grabs his rifle and starts shooting at this thing as it runs off. September 1st of 73. Now, in this situation, I remember talking to this guy. It was very early morning hours, maybe about the time we're talking right now, and this guy calls me, and he was, you can tell he's reluctant to talk. He said, look, I'm calling for three women, friends of mine, who had this weirdly strange experience. They're afraid to call anybody and don't want to be laughed at, but he said, they want me to tell you the story. And he said, the women, they were out a number of hours before. They were riding through this wooded area near Penn, Pennsylvania, a little community outside of Jeanette, and they see this large metallic rectangular object on the ground, he claimed. And he said they slowed their vehicle down to look at this thing, and as they're watching, this doorway dropped from the craft, and according to them, these two huge, hairy Bigfoot creatures ran down the ramp and ran off into the woods, and they took off. And that's all I learned from it. So it's a secondhand report, but interesting.
Oh, yeah.
And then it goes on and on and on. And then we get into some of the really intriguing reports. One case, one of my favorite Bigfoot cases, before we get into some of the really detailed UFO Bigfoot documented cases we dealt with, but one of my favorite cases was a fellow named Chester. And I don't normally use people's names, but in this case, Chester, who did not believe in Bigfoot at all, actually went on TV and on the news afterwards after he realized that these things were real. And Chester was a retired coal miner. On September 3rd, early that morning, I believe it was around 4 or 4:30 in the morning, he and his wife were in this little mobile home. This is out the little village of Whitney outside of Lake Trobe, which, again, borders along the Chestnut Ridge in Westmoreland County. Chester heard about Bigfoot. He was making fun of it. He never believed it to be real.
Never do that.
His wife and neighbors are sitting on this patio the night before, calling this thing out loud and making fun. Well, around 4:30 in the morning, all of a sudden he hears this big bang, and he thought somebody was trying to break into his separate little garage where he had a nice antique car behind the trailer. And he looks out the window, and the lights are on, and he hears this huge, hairy creature, 8.5, 9 feet tall, towering above his trailer with its back towards him. Only a couple feet away, he's looking at this thing right through the window.
Whoa.
And it's standing with its arms folded in front of him, looking towards the house next door. So he runs over, and awakens his wife. He said, "That thing they call Bigfoot, it's out here. Do you want to see it?" And she goes over, he left the light on, and whatever, she goes, oh, my God, I can't believe it. Well, at that point, they're both scared to death. They make their way over to the telephone to call the police. They bump into the wall, and he dials O for operator, and between his emphysema and being so scared, he could barely talk, so the operator hooked him into the state police. And he told them what was going on, and they had, I know they had 3 troop cars and 6 troopers out there, and the investigating officer called me from the scene. And anyhow, the troopers had followed a trail. He had just cut his grass that evening, so there was a fresh cut of grass, and this thing had walked across the yard and over to the patio and down across the road, and the troopers followed it for a distance. But at one point, and I thought this was so interesting, at one point, the track suddenly stopped and vanished where there should have been more tracks. And Chester says to me, he says, "Do these things fly as if it just suddenly disappeared?" And then, you know, as other cases are unfolding, my teams are out there in other events, and we're at the scene. There's trails of footprints that suddenly stop and disappear when there should have been more tracks.
Yep.
And then it gets much more exciting. September 27, 1973, up in Beaver County, north of Pittsburgh, 2 young ladies are waiting for a friend in the rural area to pick them up. They see this very large Bigfoot covered with white hair. You don't hear about the white ones very often, but they report still continue with white ones. So here's this huge hairy creature, which is odd enough seeing that, but in one of its hands, it's carrying a small sphere of light, and this thing's running down into the woods. So they run over and get the father of the one girl and told him what happened. He goes down into the woods. While he's down there, this object goes across the sky and projects a beam of light down into the woods.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then we have the case of all cases, and I'll give you just the basics. I have the whole story of my solid invasion book. It gets so strange and so involved, we could talk for hours about this case.
Well, why don't you save that case for the next segment then? I want to hear all those details. Are you kidding me? I want to hear all that stuff. So before we get to that, and you hold on to that one for the next bigger segment, I want to ask you, through all these cases, do you ever get cases of anyone being hurt by one?
That's not something that has been a common factor whatsoever.
Right.
So many of these cases, and again, many daylight sightings, they appear to be very curious of human activity. They've approached people quite closely. Unfortunately, and I don't recommend people shooting at them, but over the years, people have shot at these things with small arms to 30-06s. Nobody's ever brought one down. A few cases, they apparently hit them, they knocked them over, they got up and turned around and walked away in most cases. So these things did not appear to be aggressive, but they appear to be very curious of human activity.
Very curious, and I love when Bigfooters talk about how they will leave gifts for a Bigfoot or a tribe of Bigfoot or a family of Bigfoot, and then they will find that the gifts are gone because they're not all food gifts. They're not all apples and peanut butter. You know, you hear a lot of that kind of stuff going on, but teddy bears, balls, different things, and they'll come back, and the gifts will be gone. And sometimes, of course, you can go, well, you know, another wild animal took it, or somebody, some other camper or hiker came by and grabbed it. However, what a lot of these people have told me before that I've met, a big group of people in an undisclosed area of Alabama where they like to go, and they go all different places, but these people have been doing this for like 20 years. They would say, too, that they would leave a gift, it would be gone, but then they would later find that gift either the next day, the next week, months later, somewhere else where these people would happen to drive by. It was as if the Bigfooters, the Bigfoot themselves said, "Thank you for the gift. Here it is again, by the way, and it's an area I knew you were going to come to today that you didn't even know you were going to come by today." I find that extremely interesting. And Stan, I cannot wait to hear what this other story is that you said it gets even better than all of it. So I appreciate talking with you. And hey, everybody, stick around because we're with Stan Gordon. We're trying to figure out, is Bigfoot ET, interdimensional, flesh and blood, or is he, she, they even here? So, good stuff tonight here on Coast to Coast AM.